The Tom Woods Show, episode 2123.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, I don't know about you, but I am running into a lot of progressives saying, look, police, fire, schools, these are all great examples of socialism. Well, let's focus on that school example. I've got a free ebook called Education Without the State that makes a pretty darn good case for a stateless approach to education. Pick it up at nostateeducation.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. We're back with Eric July once again. I have a whole new slate of things to discuss with him. So, Eric, thanks again for doing this.
Of course, as always, man. Appreciate you having me.
Oh, it's great. It's great. So today I want to talk about a term that we all use somewhat unthinkingly, and I'm curious to know how meaningful it really is. And that, by that I mean the Black community. Like, for example, we hear about the LGBT community.
Right.
And I can understand that I think people who belong to the quote-unquote LGBT community to some extent do have some common interests, right? I mean, they would like not to be harassed. They would like not to be officially discriminated against. They do have some desires in common, but they don't necessarily all look at the world exactly the same way. Now, I'm half Armenian, and if there were, I suppose there is something like the Armenian community, and yeah, I guess there are a couple things we would all have in common, but for the most part, I'm sure we all have differing opinions on a whole lot of things, and the kind of people who would be self-appointed leaders of the, quote, Armenian community would probably be the most narcissistic and obnoxious ones that I would not in a million years want speaking for me. So what do you think about this idea that we use this term as if it has meaning, but I wonder if it really does, the Black community? I would think that Black people would have some things that they would all agree that they want. I mean, they don't want to be treated like second-class citizens. They don't want to be treated with disrespect. I think they would all agree on that. But beyond that, I don't know. Is there a Black community?
It's such a good question because you're right in a sense that we all use it so willy-nilly. You know, we just use it just to be using it. And when you think about it more critically, it seems to mean, let's say, less. So while you're right there and you're correct in that there are going to be some sort of shared interests that are probably universal to not just, let's say, that community. However, yeah, I'll be the first to admit that there's certain things that I will argue are more likely to be adopted from a cultural standpoint with any given community in comparison to others. However, they're not as universal as those will apply to every and each individual. So yeah, even me, you know, I don't use that term, let's say, as much as maybe others use it. But yeah, there are certain community that are going to be predominantly Black. And yeah, they're going to be heavily slanted maybe in terms of, let's say, what music that those general people listen to. If you go to each individual that will, let's say, that's in a predominantly, let's say, Black community and you polled them on what their favorite music was, it's probably going to be look a lot different, let's say, than predominantly, let's say, Indian community or predominantly some form of Asian community. So while there's meaningfulness and there's usefulness to that, because yeah, demographics are absolutely a real thing, I have to often catch myself because they're not as universal, I think, as we discuss it. I think purposely we have been tricked into using those terms sort of willy-nilly to just try to treat certain groups as far more monolithic than what they actually are. Because, yeah, if you get down to the nitty-gritty of it and you actually discuss some of these topics with individuals within this community, you will find that they vehemently disagree with a lot of different things, even some things that we often like to tie some of these communities to.
Culturally, I can definitely see the value in saying this or that community. Like, for example, the Armenian community would have certain culinary preferences, for example.
Right.
And of course, we have a language in common. So there is some value in it from that point of view. I remember years ago, it might have been 20 years ago, the New York Post did a survey of American whites and Blacks about what's your favorite TV show. And what was interesting was that in the top 10 TV shows for each group, the only overlap was Monday Night Football. All the other shows were completely different.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But it seems to me that if I just look at like the election results, I remember back in the 1990s, I think it was Mayor David Dinkins. I mm-hmm. think he got something like 95% of the black vote. Mm-hmm. So to that extent, it does seem like there is, like the black community, you know, we like to say, oh, you treat them like they're monolithic and they all think the same way and they need to have the same opinions. But if 95% of them are voting for David Dinkins, maybe the quote unquote black community is a monolith. But yet I think you going out and talking to people would find that, okay, maybe they cast this particular vote. But if you speak to them as individuals, you can find they have a whole bunch of opinions that are not Democratic Party mainstream at all. So how do I make sense of this? That there is such a thing as a black voting bloc, but yet individually, I think they have a wide variety of opinions.
Yeah, I think going back to the original point, I think that speaks to kind of the culture and certainly where it's at. A lot of these folks just go through the motion. But again, I can say this certainly from experience where it was just like understood that black people, and if you were black, you voted for Democrats. It was just what it was, right? For better or worse, we can sit up here and call it as silly as we'd like to call it. But yeah, that's certainly the approach that I had growing up and so many others. But even on the subject of like politics, my mother, for example, she's not the most fond of like the welfare statism, right? And it's like definitely like minimum wages and these sorts of concepts. And there's some differentiation between it. I think it also more so speaks to like a lot of ignorance within these general communities in which a lot of them are going through the motions because they feel like that's what they're supposed to do. But if you ask them, I'm pretty sure you're seeing some of these like man on the streets videos where people like start asking people certain questions. And yeah, it's not as all the time black and white as we like to think that it is. But you're 100% correct in that voting block is the demographic. And that's the difficult thing for people that are trying to navigate culturally is what do you take for face value versus what do you look more into, like, let's say more thoroughly, because yeah, you see that's a thing, demographic that you have to acknowledge that's a part of it. Like, that's their voting block, you know, that big voting block is an actual thing. But, you know, do they actually have those positions that lean more so towards that? Is that something worth looking into? And I certainly do think that it's absolutely worth looking into. So it's very difficult to make sense of it, but I think that's more attributed to a lot of people, I guess, in various things are just going through the motions, like for the most part.
I already know what your answer to this question is going to be, but I want to hear you flesh it out a bit. Have the Democrats delivered for this particular voting bloc?
No. And I think that's actually by design. I think is my position. I think if, you know, when you have a platform, which is basically anybody that runs for the Democratic Party, and it really doesn't even matter their ethnic background, they're certainly running upon the idea that life sucks. You can't do anything about it individually. And if you support me, we are going to fix the problem. If the problem was actually fixed, they'd have nothing to run upon. So what else can they do? They have to keep running on what it is that they run on now. And that's, hey, I'm going to save you. So I think that the problem in itself, going back to the economics of it all, what incentive do they actually have to fix the problem? And you look at some areas, and you mentioned earlier, like quote unquote black communities, some of these areas that have been ran by Democrats for decades, you know, and before I was alive, and obviously having problems that plague these areas that they have not been able to fix. So no, they have not delivered. But if they did, what can they possibly run on?
I gave a talk some time ago at a Mises event in St. Petersburg. And we were at, you know, a sort of fancy resort style hotel, the Don Cesar. And in the question period, somebody was asking about, you know, the quote unquote black community and that we need to reach out to them and kind of give them our knowledge and advice and whatever. And I said, you know, I have a feeling that the black community is not really interested in what people who spend their time at the Don Cesar think about how they should be living their lives. You know, that's
right.
That's a non-starter.
Right.
If people want to help disadvantaged groups, I think a lot of times the help has to come from within that group. It has to come from successful members of that group going back. And I think some middle-class black people feel like thank God I got out of there and I succeeded and that's it. I'm just going to go on with my life. And they don't go back.
Right.
So let me ask you this. What do you see as the problems in the Black community? And I know that we in a highly politicized age think there must be political solutions to them. Whether or not there are political solutions, do you think there are implementable solutions that if people tried them out, they might work?
Absolutely. I do to that latter question. But to the former, you know what I mean? Like, look, I certainly feel and I empathize with those who have been maybe grown up in certain communities. Let's say they're not like, I don't know, DeSoto, which is a maybe a Black suburb, which doesn't have as much. Let's say violence is like an inner city hood or something would that maybe is considered like a Black community or has predominantly Black. So, you know, those people want to get up out of there. And once they get out of there, there's no turning back. But yeah, to your point, I say it all the time about demographics and the importance of acknowledging it where, yeah, those groups, as with anything, are going to be more, let's say, responsive to folks that identify with them in some way. And not always is it race, but sometimes it is. So I never agreed with the idea that people should, let's say, feel like they have to, even if their walk of life, especially if their walk of life is completely different, they should be under some requirement to extend some sort of helping hand to a group that you know 9 times out of 10, they're simply not going to listen to them. Mm. Now, it is useful to, let's say, someone that may more so identify ideologically that is going to be more effective in their communication with that certain group, I think is important to, let's say, acknowledge in the sense that, okay, if they do need maybe aid from those other groups, all right, if you can help them out in whatever way that you can, absolutely. You know, I talk about culture. You know this better than anybody, Tom. I talk about culture all the time and the importance of it, right? And like, okay, backwards, as an example, we are a metalcore-ish group that mixes other elements, but we float around, obviously, in the metal and hardcore scene. I can perform a song in front of all of these people, and these a lot of these youngsters would have never listened to a message, let's say if it came from you, Tom Woods, right? And like your style and your general approach, they may have not listened to you. Mm-hmm. But because I was screaming my head off on stage and I packaged it in a way that they could certainly understand it, well, they're going to be a lot more receptive to it. I think that applies to, yeah, obviously different things that aren't just unique, let's say, to the Black community or any various sexuality community or racial community or whatever community that it is. It's just the acknowledging of the demographic and understand that, well, people are going to be more receptive to people that they feel are among them and they have some level of relatability too. I think being able to find out what that relatability is can be a lot more difficult, but that's your ticket. That's your ticket to influencing these people in a positive way. So I do think it's stupid, though, to think if someone like, for any group, if you got some white person that stays in the country of Kansas, like in, when I say country, you know what I mean, like in the middle of freaking nowhere, Kansas, white as all get out, probably they're not going to be the most suited in Dallas and Oak Cliff, Texas, and be trying to rationalize with these people about some certain cause. It's going to be more difficult. However, if you like, let's say, had someone like myself, considering that's where I'm from, that's where I was born and raised, yeah, they're going to be far more receptive to what I say than, let's say, another person.
All right. So then let's imagine that a mostly Black high school calls you up and says, we want Eric July to be our commencement day speaker. Mm. What does your speech look like?
My speech looks like, and I've done those from certainly time to time, though it's been a while, but what I would lead with, hands down, is letting people know of the story and how it is that I came up. I think that's so important, definitely if these people don't know who you are and they get it twisted, because I think often, though wrongfully, as stupid as it might be, it's just what it is. Where so many people, they wrongfully assume that because someone, let's say, does not live the lifestyle that they envision that a person, let's say, that looks like me should, they think that they come from a completely different walk of life. And often that is not true. So I would easily like lead with that. I would lead with, okay, this was where I was from. This was my upbringing. And a lot of y'all are, of course, familiar with this. So I'm trying to break down that communicative like ice barrier there to get these guys to understand that they, of course, can listen to me. And I'm not coming from a place of just ignorance. I'm not coming from a place of lack of knowledge. I am coming from a place of understanding. Granted, I may have came to a different conclusion than so many of these different people have. However, my walk of life and my upbringing isn't much different from what it is that they experienced. And I think that's so important to try to, if I am going to have some sort of reasonable approach with these people, with anybody for that matter, I think them understanding that where I'm coming from is going to probably be my most important tool before I ever go into some sort of a liberty concept or something like that that may fly completely over their heads.
Right. And yeah, that's a good point too. Now, speaking of that, at libertarian events, I see a pretty sizable number of Hispanic attendees. Mm-hmm. And you, I mean, I see you at the occasional libertarian event, and there aren't as many Black people at these events. Now, you go into the events knowing that that's probably going to be the outcome. Does that frustrate you? Does that annoy you? Like, what is the gut feeling you have when you walk into a room and most of the political people who are cheering you are not Black?
Right. It's like, yeah, so if I go to an event that is specifically geared towards, like, let's say, just liberty. So it's not really geared towards race because, I mean, these are just the demographics of what it is that we're dealing with. Yeah, there is going to be some level of expectation that most of the people are not, you know, going to be Black. I don't necessarily think of that, not as much as I used to. And now, you know, granted, I may go to an event, let's say Maj Touré doesn't, you know, we did that event, though we were leading with liberty and he was getting a lot of people's perspective on it. It was a predominantly Black event. It wasn't exclusively, though it was a predominantly Black event. You know, you do an event like that and that's sort of the expectation. But of course, liberty is not something that I wear as, like, it's not something that is like a fad of mine or something that I wear to be cool or even like, I don't know, like to be a part of the cool kids club. In fact, that's been a lot of my gripes with so many people within these different liberty groups is that they do treat it like it's the cool kids club. But of course, I think liberty is something because I believe in it that people that are Black should value. And yeah, not seeing as much is like, it's not that it bothers me because I don't think about it as much, but it is something that I, of course, if I'm going to have a preference, I would love for more people that are Black to adopt it. Now, I will say this, in comparison to when I first started doing these, so you're talking about like the earlier 2010s, in comparison to when I first started doing like certain events, like liberty-minded events, let's say that, there's a lot more than what it was previously. So certainly there's some growth in that aspect, but you know, we got some work to do.
Yeah. All right, before I go on, let me remind you about an app that's going to make your life way better, that's going to make you well-informed in a short period of time. Sounds kind of like the Tom Woods Show a little bit, doesn't it? But I'm talking about Blinkist, which takes all kinds of nonfiction categories of books and slims those books down for you to just 15 minutes of listening or reading. So you get all the key points, no fluff. I've told you about the old classics they have, like Machiavelli's The Prince and Seneca on Stoicism, but of course also a ton of modern books. For example, The Self-Driven Child, The Science and Sense of Giving Your Kids More Control Over Their Lives. That is perfect for our audience. And then you'll even find on Blinkist Murray Rothbard's book, For a New Liberty. And that's one of the early libertarian books I read that helped put things together for me, that helped me realize that in one area after another, there was a freedom-based answer to what ails us. It's the kind of thing that changes your life when you read it. And that's the kind of title you'll find many of at Blinkist. Well, right now, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/woods to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/woods to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/woods. Now, in terms of role models, a lot of times we would hear that various minority communities need to have good role models. So it's good to see, you know, minority representation in various professions and so on, so that they can have role models and say, well, if this person could be a mathematician or whatever, I don't know why I picked the most unattractive occupation of all, but you know, so can I. I could also be a mathematician.
Right.
But unfortunately, what tends to happen is the role models, the stereotype is that the role models are always athletes and musicians for every single group.
Correct.
You know, whites, blacks, it's always them. But I think the role models tend to be politicians, like Barack Obama.
Absolutely.
Goes to show you too can be president. I don't like politicians as role models. When you look at the quote-unquote black community, do you say to yourself, I wish people would listen to this person, or they would model themselves after this person rather than that one? Are there particular people you say, I wish this person had a higher profile, or they would look to this person rather than that one if they want to get a sense of where the black community is and ought to be?
Well, I guess, yeah. I mean, and even if not just for that reason, for the reasons that a lot of these guys' ideas are freaking horrible, no matter who it is, however, you can't deny their influence. Again, this is why I'm always emphasizing the importance of culture, because we have to, if we're going to be successful and have, let's say, getting these ideas to be adopted by so many different people, then that's what it is that we're going to have to do. So yeah, it does come from these different people that, you know, look like them and all that. I will say this though, and it's something that I talk about so much, be it on my channel, definitely. And like, you know, we deal with this argument all the time in the comic book space, whereas it's always, you need this person, like a black person can't like a character. I had an idiot actually say that to me. I had this Luke Cage poster on my wall during my show back when it was at my old studio. And someone, I'm not going to say the person's name, but, you know, they had basically said that the only reason why I had that person there was because the person was black. Luke Cage was black. And I was like, well, that's not true. However, that's a dumb statement. This is why, but this is an idea that is often perpetuated, and I would love to get off of that. So while it's a catch, right? You have to acknowledge that so many people have been wired and conditioned to believe exactly that because it is a learned trait. However, I do want to move away from it where they teach a lot of these youngsters and people are under the moronic impression that the only way they can relate to someone is if they share the same color as them, if they share the same sexuality or gender as them. Like, I think that's stupid in cases that don't have anything to do with that. So if we're talking about a profession that is strictly of merit, then yeah, there are various ways and various walks of life, or maybe someone has a similar walk of life to you that may not be of the same exact race as you. So I want to move away from that. And I do think it's not necessarily conducive to moving towards a freer society to try to condition people to think that way, especially young people, but so many people are. So you have to acknowledge that, but we also, I would certainly want to move away from it. So that's the trick. So I don't encourage that approach, but I acknowledge that, yeah, for some of these people that have been wired this way for their entire lives, then yeah, I mean, really the only way that you're going to get to them is having someone that's in front of them that thinks like them. It's just a reality.
All right, one last thing. I think some people would think your outlook is backward because they would say, Eric is not necessarily, and I don't know your opinion on this, but I assume I kind of do. Eric's view is that maybe not everybody needs to go to college, and that instead, for some people, it's better to be an entrepreneur right off the bat, or it's better to get a job in a trade where you actually earn more than a college graduate. You won't have $100,000 in debt or whatever. But the view is that, see, college, they'll say, is what rescues people from hopeless situations. Like if they grow up really poor, but they get this chance to go to college, this gives them a whole new chance on life. And if you're going to downplay that, then you're taking away their ticket out.
Again, it goes back to what it is that we were just discussing. It's something that is perpetuated. No matter how false it is, no matter how untrue it is, it's something that is completely perpetuated by folks that has people under that impression. Now, I will argue that that impression in itself has gotten a lot of people in trouble, not to mention the debt that is often associated with it that comes with that. And there's a stuff that people don't even understand if you actually go and talk to these young people, like what they're actually getting into. Hey, you're getting you have aspirations, but your aspirations, you literally do not need a college degree in order to get it. You're probably going to get some useless degree, some liberal arts degree that is, you have it. But as far as doing something in the field, which is what you maybe dream to do, which may be a lucrative thing, you're not going to need that. It's not even going to be of any use, certainly, to you. So I'm always having a powwow with an argument, even with people, maybe among my own family, that are like so pro-college and so pro, like, okay, this is what you have to do if you are wanting to see some sort of success. If you are wanting to get out there and be great, then yeah, this is what has to happen. And obviously, that's simply not true. It's never been true, but it doesn't stop them from perpetuating the idea. So it's such a difficult way to navigate among people because, you know, like, it's beating your head as a youngster that you had to go, like, this is what you have to do. This is what I had to do. It was like, oh, you have to go to college. You have to go to college. And it wasn't until like afterwards where I realized, or really during, it was when I realized that, okay, I was sold a sham. Okay. I did not need to be here. Thankfully, I was a collegiate track and field athlete. So I wasn't wasting all of my time. I would argue that most of what I learned in the world that's useful was me being a collegiate athlete. I learned more from that than being an academic. So I got some usefulness out of that. But to be fair, you know, I didn't need to be there in order to get that.
All right. I've got a bunch of things we're still to talk about in the last couple of days of Eric July week. But in the meantime, check out ericdjuly.com. You can also find his social media there. I love following Eric on Facebook and Twitter. He's got a lot of You do a lot on those platforms. And the way, I mean, you had a tweet the other day, somebody posted something about Roe versus Wade, and your response was, you might be a demon.
Yeah.
I just think, you know, my decision to follow Eric July is ratified over and over and over again, day after day. So, all right. Thanks, Eric. I appreciate it.
Of course. Appreciate you, man.
All right, everybody. That's going to do it for today. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about Eric talking to people in the progressive camp, and people in the conservative camp, and the kinds of successes he has, and what arguments work and what doesn't work. We're going to hash all that out tomorrow, so don't miss the next installment of Eric July Week on The Tom Woods Show. And if you like and appreciate the old Tom Woods Show, then support The Tom Woods Show as a supporting listener, and join the cream of the crop as a member of The Tom Woods Show Elite, and wait until you see all the goodies you get as a supporter. Which you've been meaning to do, by the way, haven't you? You've been saying to yourself, yeah, you know, at some point I should get over there. Go check it out, supportinglisteners.com. Check out all the goodies, decide which ones you want, and I'll see you on the inside. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of The Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.